Welcome to the Fabricator's Edge, cutting through complexity in manufacturing and metalwork. Real talk, smart solutions, and no-nonsense insight from the shop floor to the supply chain.
Welcome to this deep dive into UK manufacturing trends, the ones really impacting business right now and, well, looking into the future as well.
Great to be here. It's definitely a hot topic.
It really is. This week, we're tackling something pretty significant, the shifting landscape of UK manufacturing. You know, all the global geopolitical stuff happening, tariff wars.
Yeah, it's a complex picture. Those reports, for instance, about potential 145% U.S. tariffs on some Chinese goods, that kind of thing definitely makes companies nervous, makes them rethink.
Exactly. And we're drawing on quite a bit of recent research for this, including some interesting work by Dutton Engineering, who, you know, focus on optimizing manufacturing processes.
Right. They have some good insights into efficiency and precision engineering solutions.
So our mission today really is to cut through the noise. We want to pull out the critical information to help you understand these trends and, well, how they might affect your own business decisions.
Makes sense. We need to look at what's driving this potential comeback for UK manufacturing. Is it actually happening? And how does UK sourcing stack up against going offshore?
Yeah, we'll cover the drivers, the evidence, or maybe lack of it in some areas, and the pros and cons. Get ready for hopefully some surprising facts and a clear view of what really matters.
Should be interesting.
And if you find this useful and want to dig deeper later, you can always check out dutton-eng.co.uk.
Okay, so where do we start? The global scene feels like the obvious place.
I think so. It's certainly a dynamic time, isn't it? We're seeing this like fundamental rethink of sourcing strategies that have been in place for years.
Absolutely. That relentless focus on just the lowest possible unit price. It's starting to look a bit shaky when you factor in all the risks and uncertainty flying around now.
Yeah, exactly. Those super long, complex global supply chains. They just feel much more vulnerable now, don't they? With trade tensions, regional conflicts.
You mentioned Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the impact on energy, materials, massive.
Huge. And the Red Sea disruptions we're seeing right now messing with shipping.
And let's not forget the pandemic. That was a brutal lesson in fragility for many businesses relying on those far-flung networks.
It really was. So you've got this resilience becoming a major strategic priority, haven't you?
Definitely. Which leads to all this talk of reshoring, nearshoring, bringing production closer. We're seeing UK firms looking at Eastern Europe, for example. That's nearshoring.
Right. And friendshoring, too. Sourcing from politically aligned countries. I saw some 2023 research suggesting UK manufacturers actually preferred friendshoring, something like 55% over pure onshoring, which was maybe 33%.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Nearshoring was even lower. Around 12% in that study. It shows companies are thinking carefully about where they move production, not just if they move it.
And then you layer the specific UK situation on top of all that global churn. Brexit, obviously.
Yes, the unique UK context. It's not just the big global stuff. These new non-tariff barriers, the customs complexity with the EU, that really changes the maths for UK manufacturers.
It does. That stat about customs declarations jumping from, what, 55 million to potentially 275 million a year?
Yeah, and the cost associated around 15 billion annually for businesses, that's not small change.
No. And think about the regulatory checks, border delays, all that admin. It adds friction cost, especially for companies with really integrated EU supply chains. It must hit just-in-time models hard.
It does. And there was that initial asymmetry, too, where EU exporters perhaps had an easier time initially than UK exporters. It creates real pressure, particularly for smaller firms, maybe pushing them to look closer to home.
So, against this backdrop, you see the government trying to respond with industrial strategy, or attempting to.
Right. The 2017 strategy got withdrawn, but now we have this Invest 2035 green paper that came out late last year, October 2024. The final strategy isn't expected till mid-2025, though.
So still a bit of waiting, but what's the aim there?
It seems to be about long-term stability, targeted support for growth sectors. They've identified 8 priorities, including advanced manufacturing and clean energy.
Okay, that makes sense. Trying to boost sustainable growth, innovation, competitiveness.
Exactly. And addressing those cross-economy barriers, skills, infrastructure, investment, regulation, trade, plus aiming for high-quality jobs, hitting net zero, regional growth, and crucially, economic security and resilience. They've even proposed an industrial strategy advisory council.
Interesting. And that ties into the net zero commitment by 2050, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And this UK carbon border adjustment mechanism, the CBAM, planned for 2027.
Yes, the CBAM is a big one. It's designed to tackle carbon leakage, basically stopping UK companies being undercut by imports from places with less stringent carbon pricing.
So how does it work in simple terms?
Well, it'll put a levy on certain imports initially, things like aluminium, cement, steel, fertilizers, glass, based on the greenhouse gas emissions generated during their production, their embodied emissions.
Ah, okay. And it's linked to the difference between the carbon price in the exporting country, if any, and the price faced by UK producers under our own emissions trading system, the UK ETS.
Precisely. The idea is to level the playing field. If UK steel producers pay a carbon price, imported steel should effectively face a similar cost related to its emissions. There's a minimum import value threshold, though, 50,000 pounds, so small shipments won't be caught initially.
Right, so it could definitely make UK-produced goods in those sectors more competitive domestically.
Potentially, yes. Though how it interacts with things like free allowances under the ETS is still being worked out. But it's clearly policy pushing in a certain direction.
And alongside that, there's the focus on R&D and innovation, trying to hit that 2.4% of GDP target.
Yeah, by 2027. Plus R&D tax credits, the Industrial Strategy Challenge Fund, Innovate UK's Catapult Network, programs like Made Smarter helping SMEs with digitalization and automation.
And specific funding for sectors like life sciences, too.
So there's policy trying to create a supportive environment, but then you have the hard economic realities on the ground.
Yeah, like those volatile logistics costs we mentioned. Shipping fees spiking because of the Red Sea issues, for example.
And energy prices. That's been a huge headache for manufacturers. It's also a big driver for energy efficiency, though.
I saw a Make UK report mentioning AI being used for energy optimization.
Yeah.
And things like fiber lasers and metal fabrication using way less power than older tech.
Exactly. Companies are forced to innovate there. Then you've got raw material costs. Steel, aluminium is swinging about, causing more supply chain headaches.
And labor. Relatively high UK labor costs compared to some regions, plus recent wage pressures.
And the big one, skills shortages. It's persistent, it's widespread. We're talking tens of thousands of unfilled jobs in manufacturing.
Wow, tens of thousands. That must be holding back output.
Estimates suggest it could be costing billions in lost potential output. It's particularly bad in technical roles. Plus, the workforce is aging nearly 20% or 55 or older, less than 10% under 25.
That's a worrying demographic trend for the sector.
It really is. Which brings us back to automation and digitalization. Hmm. They're not just nice-to-haves anymore. They're becoming essential strategies.
To boost productivity, improve quality, cut waste, be more flexible, and, frankly, to cope with not being able to find enough people.
Precisely. It's about mitigating those labor constraints.
Okay, so we've got all these pressures, policies, shifts. Is there actual evidence of UK manufacturing activity picking up? Are companies really reshoring?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We certainly hear the anecdotes. You mentioned Alexander Dennis bringing electric bus chassis production back from Hungary and China.
Right, and Albert Jagger moving fastening components from China to Walsall. Volt bikes shifting from Poland to Milton Keynes.
And the reasons they give are often interesting. Quality issues, wanting better control over the total cost and the supply chain, uncertainty about trade policy.
I remember reading the Albert Jagger move was partly driven by inconsistent quality from China, yep, causing problems downstream. That shows how cheap isn't always cheap in the long run.
Exactly. And the survey data seems to back up the intention to reshore, at least. Shipbob found 2 in 5 small businesses were considering it. Lloyds Bank had 37% planning to reshore.
And quality was the main driver there, too. Something like 71% cited quality in that Lloyd's survey.
Yes. And Make UK surveys show strong belief that a proper industrial strategy would speed up reshoring, with many members planning to increase their use of UK suppliers, some significantly.
Okay, so lots of anecdotal evidence, lots of survey intent. But what about the hard aggregate data, like from the ONS?
Ah, well, that's where it gets more nuanced. Early ONS data from 2022, after the EU transition ended, did show about 5% of businesses changing supply chains, rising to 8% if you exclude tiny micro-businesses. Manufacturing and wholesaler detail were higher.
And were they using more UK suppliers?
The majority who made changes were, yes. But that proportion seemed to decrease over time in that particular data set. So widespread large-scale reshoring isn't really showing up clearly in the aggregate statistics yet.
Hmm. So a disconnect between the stories and surveys and the overall numbers. Why might that be?
Several reasons, probably. Global suppliers are still deeply integrated and often essential. The UK is largely a service-based economy, so maybe our import needs are different from purely manufacturing nations.
And perhaps there's just a lag, a gap between companies wanting to reshore and actually overcoming the barrier of the cost, finding the right skills, making the investment.
I think that's a big part of it. The barriers are real. But that point about quality being a key driver when firms do reshore is significant. It suggests it's not just about cost savings anymore.
What about general manufacturing health? Output, investment, jobs? How's that looking post-Brexit, post-pandemic?
It's a bit mixed, honestly. Recent CBI surveys, like for March 2025, showed output volumes falling quite broadly across sectors. That contrasts with some earlier periods of growth. The Purchasing Managers Index, the PMI, dipped below 50, indicating contraction back in October 2024.
So some headwinds there. Uncertainty, maybe?
Yeah, uncertainty, instability, cautious investment. Those seem to be factors. Order books, both total and export, were also reported below average in recent CBI surveys. Weak demand is cited, customers nervous about committing to capital investment.
But manufacturing still contributes a huge amount, right? Like $224 billion in gross value added in 2023.
Oh, absolutely. It's a vital part of the economy. And investment intentions aren't all negative. Make UK surveys suggest manufacturers are planning to invest, especially in technology, AI, cloud, expanding portfolios, targeting new exports. Plant, machinery, and labor were top priorities in one survey.
So despite the output dip, there's still investment planned. Total manufacturing investment was over $34 billion in 2023, apparently up 4%.
Yes, though broader UK business investment has been weaker. And again, that belief that a clear industrial strategy would boost investment further keeps coming up. But concerns about labor shortages definitely impact investment plans too.
Which brings us back to employment, those high vacancy levels.
Yeah.
You said 58,000 to 61,000 unfilled jobs.
Yeah, that's the estimate. Huge potential output loss because of it. Recruitment difficulties remain high, even with the economy softening slightly.
Why is it so tight? Post-pandemic inactivity, demographics, maybe some Brexit impact.
It's likely a combination of all those factors. It's putting upward pressure on wages, and access to labor and skills is consistently ranked as a top threat by manufacturers. Interestingly, though, the CBI survey did show a positive balance expecting workforce growth.
So, still trying to hire despite the difficulties. What about productivity? Getting more done with the people they do have?
There's some analysis suggesting higher production value with a smaller workforce in Q3 2024 compared to Q3 2023, which hints at productivity gains. Automation is seen as key here, but the UK still lags behind competitors in robot density.
But the rising cost of labor must be incentivizing more automation, more capital-intensive production.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? It makes the business case stronger.
Okay, so it's a really complex picture. Intention versus action on reshoring, mixed signals on output and investment, persistent skills gaps. Now let's shift gears slightly. If a business is weighing up sourcing from the UK versus offshore, how should they approach that decision? It can't just be about the price tag, surely.
Absolutely not. That's a classic mistake. You have to move beyond the simple purchase price and look at the total cost of ownership, or TCO.
TCO, right. I've heard that term. So it's about capturing all the costs, not just the obvious ones.
Exactly. Relying just on the FOB price free on board, the cost at the port of origin or even the landed cost once it arrives can be really misleading. Research suggests it can underestimate the true cost of offshoring by 20-30%.
Wow, that much. So what gets missed? What are these hidden costs?
Oh, all sorts. Inventory carrying costs, storing the stuff, insurance, risk of it becoming obsolete because it took so long to get here, the cost of poor quality defects, returns, rework, warranty claims, supplier management, overhead travel, communication across time zones, audits, logistics and freight, obviously, which can be volatile, customs duties and fees, intellectual property risks, opportunity cost if you can't respond quickly to market changes.
Okay, that's a long list. It really forces you to think about the whole life cycle.
It does. Acquisition, operation, usage, end of life. And there are tools out there to help, like the Reshoring Initiative's TCO estimator. When you actually do the math, that initial price advantage from offshoring can shrink dramatically or even vanish completely.
So a UK supplier might quote a higher unit price, but the total cost, the TCO, could actually be lower or much closer.
Precisely. It allows for a proper value assessment beyond just the price sticker. It's a more strategic way to look at sourcing.
And quality must be a huge factor in that TCO calculation, too. You mentioned Albert Jagger.
Definitely. Perceived differences in quality standards are significant. The UK generally has a strong emphasis on quality management systems, ISO 9001, specific industry standards. Managing quality remotely with an offshore supplier can be challenging.
What should buyers look at? Defect rates, return rates?
Yes, things like defect rate, parts per million, PPM, return or RMA rate, compliance rate with specifications, purchase order accuracy, even down to specifics like dimensional accuracy, material specs, surface finish quality, welding integrity for fabricated parts.
And checking the supplier has robust QMS certification and internal processes is key.
Absolutely. And again, automation plays a big role here. Automated processes tend to deliver much higher consistency and quality compared to manual ones.
And then there's lead time and responsiveness. Geography obviously plays a part there.
Hugely. Shorter lead times from a UK supplier mean more agility, more flexibility. You can respond faster to demand changes, carry less inventory.
Which impacts working capital? Yeah. What are the key metrics there? Supplier lead time, total lead time, on-time delivery, OTD performance.
Those are the main ones. Technology helps too. Better communication and planning systems can improve responsiveness even with offshore suppliers. But geographical proximity still offers inherent advantages. It can be a real competitive edge.
Okay, TCO, quality, lead time. What about risk? Supply chain risk must be higher up the agenda now.
Massively. Geopolitical stability, or lack thereof. Transportation disruptions, the Red Sea again. Intellectual property protection, which is generally stronger and easier to enforce in the UK. Supply chain visibility, it's much harder to see what's happening deep in a multi-tier offshore chain.
And just the reliability and financial stability of the supplier themselves.
Yes. When you add up all those different risk factors, the cumulative risk profile of offshore sourcing often looks much higher than it did a decade ago. That's a major driver for looking at UK or nearshore options.
Collaboration and communication, too. Easier when you're in the same time zone, speak the same language, understand the culture?
Generally, yes. It facilitates closer partnerships, more effective joint problem solving, easier face-to-face meetings when needed.
Although technology like EDI, APIs, supplier portals can help bridge distances.
They can, but implementation can be challenging. Data silos can persist. Good supplier relationship management, SRM practices are crucial wherever your suppliers are, but proximity can definitely make collaboration smoother.
And finally, sustainability and ESG, environmental, social, governance. That's becoming increasingly important, right?
It's hugely important for brand reputation, regulatory compliance, investor relations, everything. The UK has pretty stringent environmental regulations and those legally binding net zero targets. ISO 14001 for environmental management is common.
Whereas standards can vary a lot offshore.
They can. And that UK CBAM we discussed earlier directly links carbon emissions to import costs. Buyers also look at the whole life cycle environmental impact, things like environmental product declarations and EPDs.
And the S&G, social standards governance.
Yes. Labor practices, human rights, health and safety, UK standards are generally high. Then governance, transparency, traceability in the supply chain. The UK government is also pushing sustainable procurement through things like the Social Value Act. Plus, the UK has high recycling rates for materials like metals, which helps with the circular economy aspect.
Okay, so taking all that into account, TCO, quality, risk, sustainability, where does UK sourcing really shine? Which sectors or product types are the best fit?
Well, based on that analysis, it seems particularly strong for high-value or advanced manufacturing. Think aerospace components, complex automotive systems, medical devices, where precision and quality are non-negotiable.
Highly regulated industries, too, like food processing equipment you mentioned, pharmaceuticals.
Exactly. Also, specialized or customized products, bespoke metalwork, maybe retail fixtures where designs change frequently, things where close collaboration or rapid turnaround is needed.
And in terms of product characteristics?
Products where those hidden offshoring costs are likely to be high, things needing short lead times or high responsiveness, anything with valuable intellectual property to protect. And as we said, where the made in UK provenance adds real brand value.
Makes sense. Now, we keep coming back to automation. How critical is that for UK suppliers to actually be competitive in these areas?
It's fundamental. As we noted, the UK lags some key competitors in robot density and automation adoption. There are barriers, cost, integration challenges, data management, skills gaps to operate the tech.
But the impact it has when implemented.
It's transformative. Huge gains in productivity and efficiency. Better, a more consistent quality. Reduced waste, lower operating costs. Much greater scalability and flexibility to handle different products or volumes. It directly addresses the UK's challenges around labor costs and skills shortages.
So if you're a global buyer looking at UK suppliers, you should really be assessing their level of automation. It's like a key indicator.
Absolutely. It tells you a lot about their efficiency, their consistency, their future competitiveness, and their ability to potentially offer a better TCO despite potentially higher baseline labor costs. It signals investment in the future.
So pulling this all together, if you are that buyer doing your homework, what are the key questions you need to ask a potential UK supplier? Sound like a long list.
It requires proper due diligence, for sure. You need to probe all those TCO elements, really understand their lead times, payment terms, delivery performance, defect rates, how they factor in all costs.
And quality systems.
Definitely. Ask about their QMS certifications, ISO 9001, etc. Their internal QC processes. Show me the data on performance metrics. How do they ensure consistency?
Responsiveness.
Risk.
How flexible are they? How quickly can they adapt to changes? What are their risk management plans for supply chain disruptions? How resilient are they? What about their financial stability?
Collaboration, sustainability.
What's their approach to partnership and innovation? Can we work closely together? What are their ESG credentials? Can they provide evidence on environmental impact, social standards? Are they transparent?
And critically, that technology piece.
Yes. What investments have they made in automation and digitalization? How are they using it? How does it benefit me as a customer in terms of cost, quality, and reliability? It's not just about having the kit, it's about how effectively they use it.
So it's way beyond just getting a quote. It's a deep dive into their entire operation and strategy.
Exactly. It's about finding the right partner, not just the cheapest price, especially in today's uncertain world. It's about building resilient, value-driven supply chains. And for many buyers, looking carefully at the UK through that comprehensive lens reveals some compelling advantages.
Well, this has been a really thorough exploration. We've covered a lot of ground, from the big global shifts to the nitty-gritty of TCO and automation.
We have. It's clear the landscape is complex and evolving fast.
Absolutely. So, recapping briefly, global disruptions, new policies, they're really pushing businesses to reassess those traditional offshoring models.
Yeah, that reliance on long, potentially fragile chains is being questioned.
And the UK emerges as, well, a compelling option in many cases, doesn't it? Especially when you look beyond that initial price tag and consider the total cost, the importance of quality, the need for resilience, and that growing focus on sustainability.
Definitely. The TCO argument, the quality aspect, the reduced risk profile, those are strong points for UK sourcing in certain contexts.
Now, challenges remain, of course. We talked about the skills gaps. Cost competitiveness is still a factor.
Right.
But increasing automation and that strategic focus on high-value sectors seem to be strengthening the UK's hand.
The potential is there, but continued investment and strategic focus are key.
So I guess the key takeaway for you listening is that you really need a nuanced assessment. You can't just compare unit prices anymore. You have to think strategically about your sourcing.
Absolutely. Consider the whole picture, the long-term value and resilience.
What stands out to you, thinking about everything we've discussed, as the single most significant factor driving this change right now?
That's tough. But I think it's probably the dawning realization about geopolitical instability and the absolute need for more resilient supply chains. Risk mitigation has shot up the agenda. It's fundamentally changing the calculation away from just pure cost optimization.
Yeah, I think I agree. That sense of vulnerability is palpable. So something for everyone listening to think about. How might these trends impact your business? Where could a closer look at UK manufacturing partners actually be beneficial?
It's worth asking those questions internally.
Definitely. And remember, for more in-depth research or to see how a company like Dutton Engineering might help with specific manufacturing needs, you can visit dutton-eng.co.uk.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yes, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We look forward to unpacking another critical topic with you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to The Fabricator's Edge. For more insights and to see what we're building, visit us at dutton-eng.co.uk. Until next time, keep it precise.